But the big football news this week came from Chesterfield. Paul Cook confirmed as the new Portsmouth manager, and the Spirites moved very quickly to announce his replacement. The former Doncaster and Wolves boss Dean Saunders was appointed as the new manager at the Proac Stadium, and he's live with us today on BBC Radio Sheffield. Dean, welcome back to The Patch. Is it good to be back in these parts again?
Yeah, it is, yeah. I spent a lot of my football life around these parts, going back towards Nottingham and Derby and Villa. So, yeah, it's nice to be back. Crawley's a long way away from everywhere.
It is, and your old ground at Sheffield United is about 5 minutes' walk from here, just down the road there.
Yeah, I love playing for Sheffield United, to be honest. I had a great time there. I was 34, I think, when I was there, but we had a great team. When you think back to the team, we had Alan Kelly and Simon Tracy were the keepers. We had Wayne Quinn left back, Pabokis right back, Paul McGrath, Roger Nielsen, Lee Samford, David Holdsworth, Nicky Marker, Graham Stewart, John Ebrill, Don Hutchinson, Marcello, Peter Cuturo, me, Brian Dean, Gareth Taylor, some players there playing in the Championship. We had a great team. We got to the playoffs and we played that semi-final against Newcastle at Old Trafford, so I really enjoyed it. It's a great club. It's a great town.
Now, for people who don't know you as well as perhaps we do, because you've worked at Doncaster before, you're very hands-on. And it's no surprise at all that you can name all of those players who play for Sheffield United, because you are a real football man. And now we've been at the training ground, ready to interview at Doncaster. We've seen you out on the training ground, working with those players. I think you almost have to drag you off the training ground at times, Dean, to come and speak to us. We've been waiting for like an hour or two sometimes because you are that involved in the running of the football club and working with those players. Why do you enjoy that so much, would you say?
I didn't keep you waiting an hour, did I?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Sometimes too.
Sorry. Well, I obviously I must love football. I do love football. It's amazing because you play when you're three or four years of age, and I remember having my first pair of boots when I was four, and then every year you're just playing for fun. And then at 14, Swansea showed an interest in me, and I ended up going on the ground staff at Swansea, and I got an apprenticeship, and then I got in the first team, and then I got a free transfer when I was 19, end of the world. I'd done my cruciate ligament in my left knee when I was 17, so I missed all the youth football. So that was a slap in the face, and I think I had a slap in the face by getting a free transfer, and it probably done me good over the years. That sort of adversity you get when you're young makes you stronger. John Bond gave me a free transfer, the former Man City manager, and I remember thinking, I'm never going to let anybody tell me I'm not very good anymore, because he was wrong. He gave me a free transfer, and I ended up, within 3 months, I think, I played for Wales. I got picked to play for Wales, and I walked in the hotel in Ireland, Republic of Ireland, seeing Ian Rush and Neville Southall and Kevin Ratcliffe in reception. I'd only ever seen them on the TV, so I didn't know what to say to them. But they were all right, and I got my first cap, and I played till I was 37. So, and my biggest strength, I probably, was my enthusiasm, and I love playing football. I love scoring. So I've gone on this side of the fence, and I found that the most frustrating thing, really, that players don't. Not everybody.
Well, how
loves
tough is it for you to watch a game?
Agony. I mean, when you, it's a strange job, because you feel that bad when you lose. I do anyway. I feel that bad if we've lost, that I'll just go home Saturday night and just get in bed and just pull the sheet over my head. I won't watch football. I won't watch the games the next day. It'll take me till about 6 o'clock on Sunday before I start coming round. Then I ring the staff up and they've all watched the game, and then I watch the game. And then when you win, you're just relieved that you're not going to feel like last week, because you know how you're going to feel if you lose. So I'm relieved when we've won. It don't add up. The emotion don't add up. The win, you think
it's harder to lose than it's harder to win.
Yeah, you think you'd be like, or like jumping with joy, but you're not, you're just relieved. And then within a day you're on to the next game and you're trying to solve the puzzle there. So, but it's the next best thing to playing, And that's why I get out on the training ground. I love being out on the training pitch.
It's a lot of pressure, though, isn't it? And you've taken on some jobs that have, you know, they've not been roles where you've had it easy. The Wrexham situation, Doncaster, and I remember talking to you for a whole summer, nearly every week that summer. Have you got more than 10, 11 players in now, Dean? And you had to sort of cobble that team together, and they ended up winning a title that season. You know, the Wolves situation, not easy. And Crawley, I think a lot of people who followed League One, and we had, because we've got four clubs, were writing Crawley off around halfway through that season, and yet you had a great chance at the end of the year to stay up. So is it? Have you looked for these types of roles, or is it just the way that it's unfolded?
No, nobody looks for them. Sometimes you just get offered things and you take them. But the funny thing with the Wrexham, how long have we got? We've got a while to tell you.
We're on air till six, so
well,
go ahead.
Well, I was at Newcastle as assistant manager. We had Alan Shearer, Michael Owen, and Graham Souness was the manager. And then my first job was at Wrexham. So I thought everybody was really professional. And it was in non-league. And so I've gone in, and as Brian Carey was my assistant. I said, listen, Brian, we're playing Stevenage on Saturday. The back four have scored 25 goals between them. And they're really dangerous from set plays. Graham Wesley's the manager, turns the ball in behind you, and they get free kicks, corners, throw-ins. They've got Ronnie Henry right back, Scott Laird, John Ashton, Mark Roberts, Boswick's in front, Vincenti, the biggest team you've ever seen. So Brian says, when are you thinking of telling them, starting this? I said, we'll start on Monday, go through to Saturday. He said, don't tell this lot on Monday, they'll forget by Tuesday. I said, what do you mean? He went, no, you're not in Newcastle now, he said. You can't tell them on Monday, they'll forget by Tuesday. Tell them on Friday and you might have an outside chance of them remembering the set plays for Saturday. So Friday come, 25 past 10, said, right, let's go, Bri. He said, oh, have you seen the rain outside? You can't be doing set plays stood about out there today. It's like pouring down. So I've gone, well, what are we going to do? I said, we haven't done anything over the set plays, that's all they've got. The top of the league, they've scored 25 goals, we've got to do something. Get them in your office on the DVD. So I get them in my office, tiny office. Bring a chair in, boys, they're all bringing chairs in. Got a player called Christian Smith. 6'4", great in our box, great in their box. There's been a lot more intelligent players than Christian over the years. So anyway, they're all walking in my office. I'm in a good mood. And I've got the DVD ready to show them the set plays. Christian walks in. I'm not exaggerating. You've seen them cream cakes that look like hot dogs?
Yep.
With the red dot on the white cream in the middle. Yep. He's got half in his mouth and the other half in his hand. 25 past 10 Friday morning. And I can't believe what I've seen, because I thought everybody was professional and I'd only ever been working at that level. So I looked at him and I said, is that a real cake you're eating? Please tell me that's not a real cake. He said, what's wrong with that? His mouth was full. Like, what's wrong with that? I said, please tell me, Christian, you're not eating a cream cake Friday morning. We're playing top of the league tomorrow. He said, what's wrong with that? I said, Brian, he's eating a cream cake. He said, Christian, forget it. Go on. He said, get out the room. He said, how unprofessional is that, eating a cream cake Friday morning? So as he's walking out, he's shaking his head as if he's done nothing wrong. So I said, Christian, do you think you've done nothing wrong eating a cream cake Friday morning? He went, what's wrong with that? I said, can you imagine Michael Owen walking through Alex Ferguson's team meeting this morning, 25 past 10, eating a cream cake? He went, I could eat five cream cakes. I'm never going to be as good as Michael Owen, am I? It had nothing to do with the question, right? So I sent them all out and I said to Brian, I can't do this job at this level. I said, I thought everybody, I'm moaning all the way out to the training ground. He's going, no, come on, you're not at Newcastle. Get on with it. So we get out on the training pitch. It's pouring with rain. This story gets worse. Andy Mangan breaks out the warm-up, runs past me and Brian, and he said, that was a bit harsh this morning, gaffer on Christian, that one, in the meeting. I went, what did he say? He said, that was a bit harsh on Christian. I said, come back. I said, that tells me a lot about you. If you think it's harsh telling him off for eating a cream cake Friday morning, that tells me how unprofessional you are. He went, no, he was the only one that hadn't finished. We'd all eaten ours. They'd all had a cream cake. It was his birthday. So I quickly got used to the working in a conference. Things like that happen. They don't happen at the highest level, eating cream cakes. But I learnt everything at Wrexham. I learnt everything I did. You know, getting players to play for nothing. I was doing team meetings in the showers at A's and Yedding.
You know, you didn't drive the coach, did you, or anything like that?
I did. Yeah, I drove the coach once down. I used to cut the grass at the training ground. We used to, if we needed to sign a player, Wrexham's training ground's lovely. If we needed to sign a player, I would get the mower out the shed and I would cut the stripes on the grass so that when we drove into the car park, you could see the pitch was all striped up that way. And then when you drove the other side of the car park, I striped the pitch up the other way on that pitch. So when he looked up the training ground looked like a Premier League club. And a lot of them used to sign because that's where they work every day. So I only had a few tools, never had much money, but I used to use all the tactics I could to try and get players to play for nothing, really. And anyway, eventually it took me 2.5 years. I left them top of the league. We got in the playoffs and left them top of the league, and I got the call to go to Doncaster where I met you.
Yeah, which is true, and faced similar issues there, of course. But with Dean Saunders, the new Chesterfield manager, on BBC Radio Sheffield. And to look back at that time at Doncaster, I just wonder whether you think you got enough credit for the job there, because it was really serious in that summer. You didn't have a squad at all. You had a few players who were injured from the group that you actually had. To win a title in those circumstances, or to set the pave for the title to be won, was some effort, wasn't it?
Well, I have to say, Terry Bramall, Dick Watson and John Ryan, especially John, who I worked with closely, and then Gavin came along. I thought all the men, they're all great men, and you can see why they've been successful. John Ryan is a great bloke and a great chairman to work for. And you obviously the team hadn't won for 6 months when I got there, and it was 30-odd games, I think. A lot of players getting a bit old and I had long contracts and we had no money to change it round. So you take that job on and it's a mess. And, you know, I've done it twice since. Three times. You put your neck on the line, don't you? You risk you're walking into somebody else's mess and you're trying to put it right in a short period of time. So, you know, you can do it sometimes. You can have an effect and you turn them round. But we had to... Obviously, we tried to get some of the French lads we signed, we tried to get them in. We were getting them for cheap. Like, I think Alunga was an example. I think he was on 26 grand a week and we were paying West Ham 3. And it was the only way we could sort of improve what we got. And we did improve. And then the following season, obviously, we didn't stay up. And the following season, I had to cut the budget by 6 million from where it was. And it wasn't that big anyway. And the only way we could do it was we had to lose all the contracts, you know, like George Friend, a great lad, didn't want to let Brian Stock, great lad, James Coppinger, James Hayter, Jimmy O'Connor. Didn't want to lose them, but we had to free their money up, really. And obviously clubs don't buy them until the last minute because they don't want to pay their wages now and right the way through June. They'll wait and wait and wait. And I couldn't get any players in until some money became available. So it was a week before the season, I had 8 players, I think. I scored at Cleethorpes, if you remember.
I do remember Brian played, that was my last goal.
I had to play in that game. We had no subs or anything. So, anyway, we got the budget. Obviously, the budget's projected, so it doesn't stop till the end of the season. But we got under, and we got some money for George Friend, and we got some money for Brian Stock. James Coppinger went out on loan, and then I was able to bring in. And I thought, what I'll do, a lot of the players couldn't lift themselves with they've been losing that much. Forget me lifting them; they couldn't lift themselves because you get used to losing. It's a mentality that sets in right through the club, and the minute you get a goal against you, you feel like you're losing.
You see it so often, knowing you're at all clubs.
Yeah, so you have to really get people in with a clear mind. So I got Rob Jones, who'd done well at Sheffield Wednesday. Jamie McCoon had been part of Huddersfield's successful team. Paul Quinn had been part of Cardiff's success. James Harper, part of Hull City's success. And I thought, well, if I can get the back four organised, but I only had a week. So I thought, well, I can't get these up on the halfway line, all playing like Arsenal with Tony Adams and, you know, all in sync. It takes ages to get that right. So I said, we're just going to have to defend deep today. We were playing Walsall, first game of the season. I got the team together. I didn't know what was going to happen. I felt like we had a decent group on the pitch. But I watched Walsall play in pre-season against Wolves and they're playing like Barcelona. But they weren't finishing the chances they were getting. So we cut the centre of the pitch off so they couldn't play through us, made the ball go wide, and cross it on Rob and Jamie's head. Tommy at the back post, Paul Quinn's at the back post. So we made teams go outside us and cross the ball. And from that point, I got Kyle Bennett and David Cottrell picking up the headers out the box with Ian Hume and a counter-attacking teams. And we scored a lot of goals from David Cottrell's assists. And I think we'd won 14 games away from home at one point from when I was there. And if, you know, you're in charge and you feel like, right, we've got this going, we're top of the league, we're flying. And then you get a phone call from Wolves.
Which is a tough one, isn't it? Because you'd done a job at Doncaster and there was a job to be finished there in getting them over the finish line. But, and I think you spoke about this at the time when you took that job. You know, sometimes you've got to take a chance in football. Wolves is a club that, I think, if it wasn't the year previous, the year before, that was in the Premier League and was doing ever so well under Mick McCarthy. It had just dropped back down into the Championship, but the expectation was still there that this was going to be another Premier League club in the future again, Dean. And it looks like now that they're going to get there. But that's what you were going for, wasn't it?
Well, you've made it sound good, actually, because they'd lost 81 games in 4 years, which is, if you think about that, that's 20-odd games a season you've lost. And I was the fourth manager in that year. Mick McCarthy, Terry Connor, 14 games, 14 defeats. Solbak come in, and he brought a group of players in that had never played in the Championship, never played in England. He brought, like, six or seven in that hadn't played. So you had, like, when I got there, I thought, well, if I'm going to come to Wolves, I'm going to have to change some players because you've got the same defence and you've lost 81 games in 4 years. They've lost 16 games in the Championship up to that point and just lost to Luton in the FA Cup 1-0, who were in non-league at the time. So the club was in a bit of a mess. Anyway, I thought I was going to be allowed to sign six or seven players, which is what I think was needed to so that the six or seven pull the other four along rather than signing two or three. They get dragged in with the losing mentality. You have to change a lot quickly. If you've got money, it helps. If you haven't, it takes longer. And then I was told we never had no money, so I didn't actually spend a penny on a transfer fee for a player.
Do you regret that at all now?
I had to take the job, and it's a great club and they've got great support, but I'm a lot wiser now, and if I went this time to negotiate what I was negotiating, I'd make sure that I was able to do. Because I did say at the time, if I don't change the players, the same thing's going to happen to me. That's happened to the other three this year. So anyway, I had 20 games. We won 5, drew 5, lost 10. But normally, if you go to a club and you have 2 years and you buy a load of bad players and none of them do very well and you lose, sack me. I hold my hands up. It's my fault. Sack me. But when you walk into somebody else's mess, and a bit of a losing, sinking ship, and I got 3.5 months to try and turn it around. I thought it was going to take me 3 years when I got there. And then after 3.5 months, I'd gone, I just don't feel like I had the chance to show what I could do, really. I didn't feel like the whole thing needed sorting out from top to bottom, and I didn't feel like I had the chance to do it. So you feel a bit miffed. You know, like you say, I never signed a player. I never spent a penny.
BBC Radio Sheffield. We are with Dean Saunders. We've gone through his time at Doncaster and Wrexham and some real adversity there. And I'm sure you faced the same at Crawley as well, Dean. But in a way, this is a very different challenge because you're not inheriting a mess at Chesterfield. You're inheriting a team that has won promotion, then has got into the top six, got to the playoffs. You speak to a lot of Chesterfield fans on the phone and they say, for the last couple of years, it's the best football we've had at this football club ever. So you're inheriting a team, it's a very different situation, but still no less difficult. I mean, this is a real tough act to follow, isn't it?
Well, Paul Cook's done great, hasn't he? I've looked at their squad and they've got some good players and I'm really looking forward to it. It's what I've been waiting for. You know, I can have a pre-season with the players. I can sort of build my own team, and we've just got to keep what we're good at, which we've got some really good footballers, and that's the way I want them to play. And then I look at what we need to improve on, because sometimes looking from the outside you can see, and as a manager who's setting up against them, you do try to find the weaknesses. And probably, you know, if you asked all the players, and I've spoke to a few of them, if you can stop us playing football, then we struggle to come up with something else. So obviously they've not scored enough goals, and I can do something about that. And also I can make us a little bit, you know, you look at Chelsea, how they win games when they're not playing well. We need to be able to win games when we're not playing well and that we're not stringing them passes together. But my first job is to try and stop the best players leaving. Obviously, Paul's going to come and try and take a few of them.
How tough is that going to be?
Well, yeah, it's going to be tough because, you know, when you're a footballer, if a bigger club offers you more money than you're earning, and I'm the manager who says no, sometimes them players take it well, sometimes they resent you for it, so sometimes you have to let them go. But we're not going to let anybody go for nothing. We're going to make sure that if someone leaves the club, we're going to get our full whack from, because the club's done well for 2 years, and you know, there's no point in just letting the players who've done well leave, and we've got to replace them.
There's a lot of talk about Paul Cook already being in touch about Gary Roberts. Do you expect to be able to keep hold of him? Is there any way of keeping hold of Gary Roberts? And what about Jimmy Ryan as well? He's another player who it just seems like he's going to be moving on.
No, I spoke to Jimmy this morning, actually. It's Drew Talbot, Jimmy, and the big striker, the big French boy. He's out of contract as well. There's three of them.
Nandwier,
yeah. There's three of them. So I think they both, all three of them are really good at what they do. Jimmy's a really good footballer and I don't want to lose him. His contract's run out, but he's one of the better players and, you know, he obviously makes that midfield work. Gary Roberts, I've always admired. I know I tried to sign him at Donny. I had him at the stadium. He went and signed for Swindon, phoned me a week later, said he'd made a mistake. Paolo Di Canio was running him up and down the pitch on his own. So he phoned me up and said, I've made a mistake, can I come back? I said, I can give you half what you're getting now, but... So I tried to sign him then. I think he's a really clever, intelligent player. And maybe, looking at him, he can put balls inside fullbacks. He can thread strikers in. We're obviously missing a striker or two. And we probably need somebody like Defoe-type player. And we probably need someone like Ricky Lambert-type player. So that if teams sit back in against us and let us have the ball, we've got a big target man that we can knock the ball up to, as well as Defoe, who we can thread through, which is the way the team plays. So when teams stop us playing, we've got other options, and obviously I can pass on what I've learned over the years to all of them.
I suppose the one thing with Paul Cook, and he's got a relationship with these players, and if he approaches you and if he has the opportunity to speak to any of them, I'm sure that he will try and sell Portsmouth. But you're a League One club, they're a League Two club. That has to play in your favour.
Yeah, of course. You never know what's going to happen at Portsmouth. You know, it's not easy winning that League Two. So if you go down there, it's a long way, Portsmouth, and they don't get promoted first year. Hopefully they do, because I like Paul. He's done well and he's climbing the ladder, and he's took that job on there, which is, you know, they get 18,000 crowds. So you know how it works. If you're not up there at Christmas, all hell breaks loose and it's chaos, and you're a player, you're stuck in it. Sometimes you're stuck in it. You might be earning decent wages, but you can't get out of there. So I've obviously told these boys these types of things, and I've told them how much I want to keep them and be part of what I'm trying to do, because I've got to take the club forward now, and I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, I'll put my enthusiasm and my desire to win, I'll try and knock it into all of them.
Can you win promotion next year?
Well, they were two games away. It's only
That's why I ask, because, yeah, you know, it might seem like a daft question, but no, you know, you got in the playoffs last year.
Well, they were two games away, yeah. And like I said, you know, you get a bit of luck against Preston. When you look at, when it gets to that crunch time there, you need a bit of luck. You need the referee to give you a decision for you or against you. And then you look at Preston strike force, which is not luck. You know, they've got Sylvani Banks play, Kevin Davis, Paul Gallagher, Gardner. And Beckford. So as a manager, that is a nice feeling to have when you're stood there and it's not happening and you look round and you've got Kevin Davis and Ebanks Blake on the bench and you can just go, on you go, and they do something. And that's what you pay for. So the playing budget there shows you how you can buy your way out the league, because you're only as good as your strikers. And I've said, Chesterfield, you can play as good a football as you like. If your strikers are not in the right place at the right time, when you're making them chances, you're leaving yourself wide open at the back, because everybody joins in. So you've got to make sure your fair share of chances, you put them away. Otherwise, you find yourself getting done, counter-attacked. So we have to, I have to try and get him in pre-season, get him motivated, and all I can say to the supporters and all the players, I try my best every day, and I don't leave any stone unturned, and we go over things, we practice set plays, we practice the team shape with the ball and without the ball, and I try to give him a route through to the opposition's net every day. So we've got patterns of play that we try and work to, so everybody knows where they're going. But most of all, you've got to be a winner. And I can't work with lazy players. I've tried that. So I find that really difficult. Unless you're winning a game for me every week, I find it difficult to forgive you for being lazy. And any of the top teams I played in, I was fortunate to play for some great teams, great clubs. They wouldn't accept any passengers, and they wouldn't accept you playing for yourself. So my favourite player would probably be Drew Talbot, or players like him. Who
would suggest that you want to, would suggest you, you're keen to keep him?
Well, I'm trying to speak to him now. I don't know where he is. He's probably in Magaluf or somewhere on his holidays. But I'm trying to get hold of him now. I think he'll ring me back as soon as he gets the message. But I think he'll be getting some offers from other teams. We just need to get him fit. He'll run through a brick wall, and you want him in the trenches with you. And when we go away from home, to the likes of Yeovil and Crawley, are not in the league now, but them types of places where it's not easy, you need players like him in your team. And if the football's not working, you can rely on him.
There's one or two other rumours. Do it. I mean, just quickly, you spoke to Jimmy Ryan today. Are you optimistic at all that you can keep him?
If he gets passed through security at Malaga Airport, he might not get past him. I'm not confident of keeping any of them because I don't know what they've been offered. So I've just turned up and, you know, I've made the calls and asked them what they were doing. I've only spoke to, out of them three, I've only spoke to Jimmy so far. And I said to him, just ring me when you get back. He's on his way home from holidays today, so I'll speak to him later on. Try and keep him at the club. I mean, that's going to be my toughest job, keeping all the players who've done well at the club. And then adding the right ingredients to make us better and a bit more resilient and have a plan B. Not saying they haven't got one now, but my plan B would be different to Paul's, and find a way of winning when we're not playing well.
One of the rumour, well, there's a couple of others at the moment, which I'm going to put to you now so we can just clear this up. There's been talk of David Dunn coming in as a player coach. I think he's going to be leaving Blackburn after a long career at Ewood Park. Is he somebody who is on your radar?
No, that's the first I've heard when you've told me. Obviously, he's a good player. I worked with him at Blackburn. A really good player, David. I don't know how fit he is. But, you know, the problem I've got at the moment is I'm waiting for the vultures to come and snap my best players up. And sometimes they're prepared to wait so they don't have to pay their wages. And if I dive in too soon on what the players I want, I've got lists of players that I would like to get in. But if I dive in too soon and two players leave I didn't expect to leave, because we get offers we can't refuse or they want to leave, then I find myself messing my budget up a little bit. So, I hope the fans can be patient. I will be signing some good players, but we might have to hang on a bit to make sure we secure all the futures of the boys who I want to stay. And if I like them, I'm going to try my best to keep them.
Lee Fowler's a player you've worked with quite a few times. Is he somebody you would be interested in working with again?
Well, again, he's a great footballer, Lee. Wasted talent, I've told him. He's had so much adversity in his life. He's had all sorts of personal problems. And I got him when he was at his lowest ebb and give him the chance. And I enjoy watching him train. He's similar to Jimmy, actually. He plays similar to Jimmy. Really good on the ball, really talented. Lost his way, should be playing in the Championship right now. Lost his way. Once you get him fit and up and running, Lee is as good a footballer as anybody in League One. But he's had offers made to him now. He's obviously out of contract at Crawley, so he's not getting paid right now. I can't move right now. I don't know what's going to happen with Jimmy, as he said. I don't know what's going to happen with Gary Roberts. But I'm trying my best to keep him. And then I've got the list in front of me, which is getting bigger and bigger every day. So we go through it with the chief scout. I'll be meeting him. I haven't met him yet. I'll be meeting him when he's back off holidays. Then I'll be bringing my staff in that I'm bringing with me. And I'll be speaking to all the staff who are at the club Monday, telling them what their roles are. And on we go then. Let's build a team for the future.
There's one other rumour which I want to ask you about, and that is from down south about Reading having some interest in Sam Clucas. Is it far too early for them to have made a call, or is there something in that one?
I haven't heard that one, but he's a good player. And he can play left back, left side midfield. I watched him play as a striker. He's got a brain, keeps the ball when it comes up to him. Really good prospect. I'm really looking forward to working with him, so I'm hoping that we can hang on to him. It's going to take a massive offer for us to leave him out the door. He's one of the players you want to keep. I don't want to be, I'm a manager and I got to get results. I've got to win. So I don't want to be losing my best players, because you can't replace them. It's hard to go around replacing the boys, especially when they're in a comfortable environment and they know what they're doing and they've been playing well. I just got to try and, like, obviously a lot of the players will be disappointed Paul's left. You know, they've caught a lot of teams out last year with the football they're playing. And second time round now, this year, it's going to be difficult, because we'll get a bit more respect from every team. Mm. And then you've got to make sure that when teams, instead of teams saying, oh, it's only Chesterfield, we'll beat them, they've just come up from League Two. Now they're going, these spanked us last year, so we can't let that happen again. Maybe just let's have a little plan that we show them a bit more respect. Then we have to take the next step now to get round all that. If teams want to have a fight against us, we've got to be big, brave and strong. If teams want to play football against us, have a football match, we've got to be able to match them at that. And if they want to have a running match, box to box, we'll be fitter than you. I can guarantee you that. The players will be fitter than the other team they're playing against by the start of the season. So we've got them three things, them three tools that you need. And we've got to be able to do everything. We've got to be able to overpower teams, out-football teams and out-work teams. And I won't accept anybody who's lazy.
Any news on a number two yet?
Well, the people I want to bring in with me are working for other clubs right now, so I've got to go down the route of telling the club they're at first and then asking permission to speak to them. And so I can't be coming on Radio Sheffield and telling everybody before I've actually told the club. So, yeah, I will be bringing in good people with me who think along my lines and help the players, good coaches, help the players and get better. I mean, every single player, I'll call him in before the season starts. I'll tell him exactly what I think he does right, what he's not doing, how to get up to the next league as a player, personally themselves, what they need to do in the team, what their role is for me, and what I expect from them. And I'm not interested in players who give me 3 out of 10 one week, 9 out of 10 the next week, 3 out of 10 the week later. I want players who are going to give me 7 out of 10 most weeks and occasionally get an 8, occasionally get a 5. And we might get away with a couple of strikers who don't touch the ball but score. And I think the team would take that now. If we could get a striker who's not really in the game but he's on that last pass in the 6-yard box, that's what the team's missing.
Do you think that'll be your toughest find? I mean, everybody's looking for the strikers, aren't they, Dean? We talk to every single manager on this patch. We've got 6 of them. And they always mention, we just want to get that striker, but everybody's looking for it. Every club in the Football League is always looking for one more striker, aren't they?
Yeah, well, like, if I was a striker myself, so I always said that the most important players in your team are the people who score the goals. That's why they're strikers. So you 10 are there to get the ball to the centre forward. Get the ball to the centre forward as early as possible with quality, not just humping it. He needs a quality pass as early as he can so he can outthink defenders and he can score. Now, the best pass is the one where the goalkeeper just kicks it straight on the pitch, he runs through and scores. And everything else from that is watered down. And you find a way of getting the ball to him as quick as possible. But you can play as well as you like if you haven't got people who get to the ball first. If you look at it this way, there's 5 defenders normally in the box, or 4 defenders in the box. And Michael Owen keeps getting to the ball first. Why? How does he keep getting? All them are trying to stop him. But he keeps, when the ball comes in, he seems to get where he should be. It's because he's got anticipation and a brain, and he can turn a normal cross across the face into a goal. And you have to pay money for them players, unfortunately. You can be the best tactician, you can be the best coach. You have to pay for a goal, normally. If you're getting strikers on a free transfer, they're either too old, and you might get them, or they're on too much money, so they've been released, or they don't score. And the game's littered with strikers who don't score. So the difficult bit is spotting them. Spotting them when they're young, their potential. My son plays for Crewe, and he got 30-odd goals for the youth team. And you try and look, and people are looking. He's 19, people are looking, thinking, can he play upper league? And you're always thinking, can he go upper league? Can he? Is he ever going to be Premier League? Is he? You're always, it's difficult. And until you give him a chance and a run of games, it's difficult to spot a goal scorer.
How good is he? Is he good as his dad?
He's different to me. He's a nice lad. he's 6 foot one now, I think, all left foot. But he plays on the shoulder, runs in behind, and he's been at Crewe since he was six, and I've just let him. I've had two or three conversations with him about him. I've never gone. I've just left him alone. All I ever talk to him about is his attitude, and why he's not chasing, why he's not jumping for headers, why he's not getting hold of the ball. Why he's not playing with? If he's ever not playing with any desire or determination, I just tell him after the game. But his movement's good, and he likes football. He loves playing, which is the main thing. And I've had a great life out of football, a great career, and you'll get loads of slaps in the face along the way. But if you can imagine being a footballer, I'd play for nothing, but you're getting paid for it as well, and coming in having a game of football every day on the training ground with your mates. Some people look when you start having to win. Some players let it bog them down.
Has that been lost from the game a little bit? Just to finish on this point, has that been lost? Some of the fun aspects of it. Is it a bit too serious sometimes, football?
Well, I think all the characters have gone out of the game now because there's a million cameras around the ground, and even if you wink, it gets caught on camera. And we used to have players interacting with each other and having a laugh and a joke, but now you see them putting their hands over their mouth, walking off the pitch, and I suppose, you know, they get scrutinised that much, they're earning that much money, they get scrutinised from on the back page of the paper, and, you know, there's cameras go zoom right in on them and they're doing this and doing that. So in the end, the players just think, I'm not talking to anybody, I'm not going to say anything on the pitch, I'm not going to do anything. And it just sort of, I think any entertainment business you have, you always have to have a baddie, don't you? You always have to have, who's the baddie? Used to be Robbie Savage and people like that, didn't it? It used to be like, there's always like a team who had the big tough centre back and the aggressive midfield player and the cheeky chappy striker. But I think they've drifted away from the public a little bit with it, and then the public just can't get their head around how much money they're earning, and they just keep their heads down now, don't they? They're earning 250 grand a week, but Sky's got that big that the players get a bit of the pie. So if there's anybody else who can do it, there aren't. It's supply and demand. You know, them players can do things other people can't do.
Yeah, it's a very interesting situation, and I'm sure that it's going to present a challenge for all managers throughout the years as well to control those players who are earning more and more. But Dean, we really appreciate your time today. I'm sure that the Chesterfield fans are going to be excited about what next season brings, a season after they've just finished in the playoffs, and it's going to present a new challenge for you as well in your career, having previously worked at clubs who, of course, were struggling, and now you're going to get hold of a team that is on the upwards. It seems.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. As I said, you know, you walk into a mess and you try and put it right quick, and there's all sorts of problems in there, rooted. And this club has been run by good people. The chairman's been good to me. Chris Turner's obviously an ex-player, so he's been great to me. The players look like a good squad. They look as if they're motivated, good group of lads. The fans have doubled probably in the last few years. Got a new stadium, training ground's magnificent, the academy's good. I'm looking forward to getting into the academy, and I'm looking forward to, in this area we're surrounded by big clubs, and I'm looking forward to getting the kids round Chesterfield and round this area to sign for Chesterfield, and I'm going to personally go out my way to make sure we get that academy going, and I'm part of it. And when the kids are signing, I'll be there signing them and making sure the parents know that they've been looked after and they've been taught properly and they've got a chance. There's a route right through the club into the first team, and I will give some of the young players a chance to play, and I'll show the under-10s, the under-11s, under-12s who are signing for us that if you stay at Chesterfield, you're going to get a chance to play for the first team. You're not like Man City where you go there when you're six, and at 19 they buy a £35 million centre forward, 19-year-old, and you don't play, you end up back at Rotherham or Chesterfield. At our club, hopefully I'm here for a long time, and I'm going to make sure that academy brings some players through and we get some good kids, and they all realise that I will give them a chance to play in a team, and they're not wasting their time, and I will move them up the ranks, and we'll try and get them all to play the same way as well.
Dean Saunders there, the Chesterfield manager, live on BBC Radio Sheffield. Dean, thanks a lot for coming in.
Thanks very much.